tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. Great to see you guys. So excited that you're here today, especially for the kickoff of a brand new series. But before we jump into things, the last couple weeks, a few of you have mentioned that the Wi-Fi, the guest Wi-Fi in here, was a little wonky and you weren't able to get on YouVersion or you had to use your own data. And so we've worked on it, and our at least temporary solution is now requires a password. So it's still free, but it requires a password. So if you struggle with our guest Wi-Fi, we have a slide that is the password up there. And so if you're one of the ones that have gently pointed out to us that the Wi-Fi was not working, this is hopefully the solution for you. If you don't mind using your own data, just ignore this. Well, today we are kicking off a brand new series entitled Anger Mismanagement. And when I look out at you guys, I don't see a lot of angry people. I see a lot of pretty people. You guys look happy, you're smiling, you guys look like you have it together. But I am convinced that there is some anger deep down inside that we don't really deal with. And so in this series, what we're going to do is we're going to explore and look at our anger from within and try to come up with some practical ways how to have an anger that actually is pleasing to God. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. What I want to do is I want us to dive into our text because we have a lot to cover today. And we're going to read our text together, and then I'm going to ask that you actually stand up and read it with me to show some honor to the text. So if you would stand up to your feet, it's going to come up on the screen. We're going to read it loud and proud. This is the later service. You've had time to wake up. I want to hear your energy. Ephesians 4, 26 through 27 says, "In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. And do not give the devil a foothold." Now that we've read the text, let's engage with God and ask Him to speak to our hearts. Would you pray with me? God, we just come before You, and we ask that You would remove the distractions from this room. We ask that there would be nothing that would take our eyes off of You. And so often, God, we're so distracted by all the noise that's going on in our own hearts and minds. And so we just ask that You would just still our hearts, You would quiet our minds, and that You'd speak to us, God. And we ask, God, that You give us the courage to obey You no matter how difficult it is. God, I just ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be pleasing in Your sight. Oh, Lord, You are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. It might just be me, but I feel like everybody is angry. And I feel like over the last couple months, I have noticed just how angry everyone is. It seems like, especially if you get online, that it doesn't take much for people to get really angry about things. In fact, from my perception, it feels like everybody is offended by everything. That if you just have a simple post, someone finds a way to get angry about it, to get upset about it. And now Facebook even provides a little angry emoticon so you can let people know that you didn't like their post or their status. And like we are an angry people. But the way that I view the world is I often view the world as everyone else is angry, but like that's not my personality. Like I'm not an angry person. In fact, I view myself as being very laid back, being one that really likes to bring the peace together. And I view myself as someone that it takes a lot to get angry. It's not that I never get angry. I just feel like it takes a lot to get me angry. But one thing that Jesus has taught me is that it is so easy to see other people's faults and failures, and it's very difficult to see your own. And so one thing that I try to do is I try to take some personality tests and try to do some research in who I am, because it's so easy for me to say, well, everyone else struggles with anger, but that's not really my problem. And so I'm constantly looking for ways to better understand myself. And I've taken various personality tests, but this week I saw a brand new one that I hadn't heard about, and it was only $12, and it promised me that it was going to give me some amazing results. And it did. It gave me some incredible results. If you're looking for a personality test yourself, if you want to better understand how to work with the people you work with, or maybe even in marriage, you're wanting to better figure out yourself, I would recommend the Enneagram Personality Test. It's Enneagram. It was fascinating, and it's long. It took me 40 minutes to take this test. And what they do is they take all of your answers, and they compile it into a list, and then they give you a number. And the number that they gave me was 9. And so when they talk about my personality, they kept referencing 9s. 9s do this, 9s do that. And so apparently there's a lot more people that have the number 9, and we're all grouped together, and we have this very similar personality. And the first whole, like, over half of it was the positive things about being a number 9. And I was feeling really good about myself. It said some things that not, like this. 9s are optimistic, reassuring, supportive, have a healing and calming influence. Harmonizing groups, bringing people together, a good mediator, a synthesizer. That makes me think of like the 80s, like ding, 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 like I like that. And a communicator. And I'm like, this is me, like this, I fit. I don't argue with that. That's me. Like when I get with groups of people, I want everyone to get along. I feel like I'm optimistic, sometimes to a fault. I feel like I'm a pretty positive person, and I love to communicate. So I'm like, this is awesome. But after it got through all the good stuff, it went to some things that number 9s need to work on. And I wasn't as big of a fan as that part of the section. In fact, this is an exact quote of one of the things that said 9s tend to do, that we struggle with suppression, that is suppressing our own feelings. We tend to control and have outbursts of temper. Not outbursts of anger, outbursts of temper. I don't even know what that means. All of which are generally unrecognized and unacknowledged by the 9. So like before I took this, I viewed myself as I'm not one that gets angry very easily, but now I take this and I'm like, man, I don't know myself very well because the negative emotions inside of me, I don't recognize. And I went on to read and it talked about that how 9s are so committed to having peaceful environments that they actually feel a conflict from within, and any negative emotions, 9s tend to stuff way down. And so a number 9 actually goes through anxiety like other people, but a number 9 doesn't feel anxiety. And so I don't think I struggle with anxiety, but it's that in my mind, I've suppressed it. I've pushed it way down. And it says number 9s don't feel stress. And very often, I don't feel very stressed. There have been multiple meetings where people are freaking out like the Titanic is sinking. And I'm like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, I don't understand why everyone's freaking out. Well, according to this test, I suppress my stress. One of the things that it said that I just found was fascinating is it said that because we're not very attuned to our negative emotions, number 9s tend to be overweight because they eat their feelings. And I was like, get out of my head, Tess. Like, you don't know me. But like number 9s, because we struggle with dealing with our emotions and getting the real negative stuff out, we tend to want good experiences. And so we can find that through some things that can harm us, like food. And I read this and it made me think instantly of very often in my relationship with my wife, Monica. She would not characterize me as an angry person or someone that has a bad temper, but there are multiple times when we're dealing with a project with each other, and as we're communicating, she'll look over to me and say, why are you so mad about this? And my response every time is, I'm not mad. Well, I don't recognize this temper, this anger. I don't recognize it because I stuff it down because I just want to be peaceful. And maybe you are like me in that you don't view yourself as a person that has a temper or an anger problem. And maybe you're like me and you don't feel like you're as angry as everyone else is around the country. But I would say that if you were honest with yourself, if you would do some self-reflection, there are some areas in your life where you're getting angry about things that are causing some divisions and are not bringing this world together. The emotion of anger is an emotion that God gave us. It is not an emotion to suppress. It's not an emotion to avoid. It is literally an emotion that God gave us to handle what's going on inside of us. So just like when you cry, that's an emotion given to you by God to express sadness. Or when you laugh, that's an emotion given to you by God to express something that made you laugh or something that made you feel joy inside. Anger is literally the body's response to a situation that you feel is not right. The problem is that we don't get angry about things that God gets angry about. We get angry about little things that cause divisions and cause stress in our life, things that we cannot control. And I just want to have a little fun with this. I was vulnerable with you and shared some of my results, and so I just want you to be vulnerable with me. And we're just going to talk about some things that make the common person angry. I'm going to read off a list of some things, and if I say this thing and it makes you angry, I want you to admit amongst your church friends that this makes you angry. And the way that we're going to do that is if I say something and it makes you angry when it happens to you in real life, I just want you to raise your fist and give a grunt. Ah. Okay? So, let's practice that. I've just said something. It makes you angry. What do you do? Rah, that was great. Great participation. All right. So here's some things. Does this make you angry? Bad drivers. Screaming children. Yeah. And I tell you, there have been times when my son has lost his cool and he has screamed and like it's just brought out these feelings that I wanted to punch him. Like, did I say that out loud? That was not supposed to come out. Being interrupted. Only four of you. Noisy eaters. Liars. Slow-loading computers. If you did not raise your fist, you are a liar. And that makes me mad. Couple more. When there's a double standard. The political party you did not vote for. Rude people. People who take advantage of government services. Slow walkers. People who still write checks to pay for their groceries. You are my people. I do not represent Jesus very well when someone writes a check in the... Oh, my gosh. Get a debit card for crying out loud. All right, one last one. Nickelback. Just a few of you. Okay. So, like, even though we're having fun with this and we're laughing, as you can see, there are a lot of things that make us angry. And oftentimes, these things that make us angry, they derail us from doing what God has called us to do. And oftentimes, the things that make us angry are little simple things that should not control us, but they have great control over us. And we find ourselves getting angry at our kids or our spouse or at things that we cannot control. And so what we want to do in this series is we want to look at some practical ways to handle, to manage our anger. Because if you're here today, and even if you're like me and you say, well, I'm not a very angry person, there's some anger deep down inside. There's some things that you get angry about, and we want to explore those. Our text for today is written by a guy by the name of Paul. And at Next Level, we say that Paul is a PTPer, and he's incredibly important because if you're here today, even if you're new to the church scene and you don't know Paul at all, if you're like, who's this Paul guy? Even if you don't have a fat clue who Paul is, you have Paul to thank for you being here today. Before Paul, Christianity was viewed as a cult of Judaism. And most of the people that were part of Christianity were Jews who had moved from their belief of Judaism to now believing the Messiah came, and they called themselves Jewish Christians, or they called themselves the Way. You can read about that in Acts. Paul is the one that came on the scene and said, no, Jesus told us to go spread the gospel around the world. And so Paul took the message of Jesus and started telling these people who had no religious background, who didn't know about God, who didn't know about Jesus, or who didn't have a Jewish background, and he started reaching people. And primarily, he reached people that were considered to be pagan. That is, they were coming from either a background that worshiped multiple gods, or their gods would do things like sacrifice babies, or would do like detestable things that we would just say that that's wrong. That's not a healthy form of religion. And Paul was going around the world, and he was reaching these people, and he was telling them about Jesus. One area where he spent more time than anywhere else on his missionary journeys was an area called Ephesus. And in Ephesus, he reached a handful of people that formed multiple churches. After 4 years, Paul leaves them and he goes off on another adventure, and you can read about that in Acts as well. And while he's on this next adventure, he writes a letter back to the churches in Ephesus. Now, if you're not familiar with Paul's writings, this is his typical MO. The first part of his writings, of his letters, contain what we call theology. And theology is just the study of God. And so before Paul gets to anything else, he wants to make sure that his audience understands who God is. And if you think about it, he's writing to people who don't have an understanding of God. This would be like someone who grew up maybe in an atheist home or who believed in a different version of God, who had no church background, and now they call themselves a Christian, but they don't even fully understand the God that they worship. And so he spends a lot of time explaining who God is. And a lot of times for us with a Western mindset where we just want quick answers, we skip over the theological stuff of Paul. We just say, oh, this is kind of boring. I don't really get into that. But it's incredibly important. And the reason that Paul puts it first is in order for us to get the practical stuff of God, you've got to understand who God is. And so I would encourage you to read Ephesians on your own. Spend some time reading it from the beginning to the end. It's only a few chapters. It'll just take you a couple days. But the first half, you'll read some theology of who God is. What we're going to cover today comes in the practical portion of Paul's letter. After he gets to theology, he gets to very practical measures. And in the practical section, he says some things that he's talking to this crowd, and he's saying, listen, some of you used to lie. In your old life, in the old religion, in the old way that you carried yourself, lying was acceptable, it was approved. But now that you're a Christian, it's no longer acceptable to lie. You're held to a higher standard. And he talks about stealing, and he's like, some of you, you steal and you didn't feel bad about it, and that was just part of the culture, that's who you are. But now that you're a Christian, there are no more five-finger discounts. You got to stop stealing. You got to move on from that. And he's not doing this to be legalistic or judgmental. He's doing this to raise the bar. And if you're a part of any organization or any company or any movement, they have standards. Even if you work at like Chick-fil-A, they tell you that you can't have facial hair, and if you have tattoos, you've got to cover your arms. Well, Chick-fil-A is not wrong. They're not being legalistic. They have a standard, and they want their employees to keep it. And that's what Paul's doing. He's not saying you're an awful person or you're not good. He's letting you know, now that you understand who God is, this is the standard that you're aiming for. And you might miss it sometimes. You may not hit it all the time, but this is where we're going. This is what we're aiming at. And in this incredibly practical section, he has a few sentences on anger. We read it already, but I want to break it down for you. This is the very first part, Ephesians 4, 26a. Paul says, in your anger, do not sin. Now, before we explain what that means, there's something that we need to notice right away. That when Paul wrote this, he put it in quotation marks. And so when you're engaging with the Bible, I encourage you to ask some questions. You shouldn't just read it like mindlessly and just kind of zone out through it. You need to engage with the text. And so you need to ask yourself some questions. Why did he say that? Who is he writing it to? What was the point of it? What's the original understanding of that? And if you find something in quotes, this is important. It's important to know, who is Paul quoting? Is he quoting some philosopher or a psychologist? Or is he quoting God? What is he quoting? And so I didn't know who he was quoting. So in my Bible, I have a study Bible. And at the bottom of it, it has some notes, and there was a little note there. And the note said, I just want to read to you the note, the exact wording of the note. It said, Paul is quoting Psalm 4:4, and then parentheses, the note said, see Septuagint. Well, I don't have a copy of the Septuagint, and the truth be known, I don't have a fat clue what the Septuagint is. So I'm like, I don't know how to see Septuagint. I do know what Psalm 4:4 is. That's in the Old Testament, and most of the Psalms were written by David. So I go to the Old Testament in my Bible, I crack it open, I find Psalm 4:4, and I find David's words. And this is supposed to be an exact quote of what Paul said. But this is what David wrote. Tremble and do not sin. When you are on your beds, search your hearts and be silent. Now, I don't know about you, but that's not what Paul wrote. Paul said, in your anger, do not sin. This is saying, tremble and do not sin, and talking about your beds and searching your hearts. And it's like, either Paul like didn't really know what he was quoting, or something else is going on here. And so now, because I have more questions, I go to the footnotes of my Bible to try to find some answers. And in the footnotes of my Bible, it says about this verse that it could also say, or in your anger. And then it said, parentheses, see Septuagint. At this point, I'm a little ticked off, because I'm like, I don't know what the Septuagint is. I don't know how to see it. How am I supposed to understand this verse? Well, thank God for Google. According to Google, the Septuagint is a translation of the Hebrew Bible and some related texts into Koine Greek. It's a primary Greek translation of the Old Testament. It is also called the Greek Old Testament. Now, I understand that is Greek to most of us in here, so let me explain what's going on. The Old Testament part of the Bible was written in Hebrew. By the time that Paul comes around, no one speaks the Hebrew language. So when they were converting people to believe in God, in order for them to understand the Bible, they would have to teach them Hebrew. Well, that's a bunch of lessons, and that's a long process to teach someone another language. In Paul's day, everyone spoke Koine Greek. So because people didn't have their own Bibles, it was illegal, they didn't have them, they didn't pass them out like we do today, they had to rely on someone who could understand the Bible and teach it to them. So in order to help people better understand, help pastors and preachers and rabbis better understand the Bible, they took the Hebrew Bible and they translated it into Koine Greek. Okay, now I know that's like whew, over some of your heads, but this is important. The reason that Paul doesn't have an exact quotation is because he is quoting the exact words from the Greek and not the Hebrew. And it's very similarly to when you read the Bible, you're not reading an exact translation from either the Hebrew in the Old Testament or the Greek in the New Testament. You're reading the English equivalent of the words. And they do their best in English to try to pull the exact meaning, the exact words, but sometimes in languages, they say a word that we don't have an equivalent of that word. And so when Paul was quoting this verse, he was taking the Greek version of Hebrew of the Hebrew words that David would have written. So now that I know that, I'm like, okay, I want to just for a second do some research on David's words. I want to figure out what David said, because Paul is quoting these words. It's really important. So I found a commentary that discussed and gave an idea of what David meant, his point about being in your bed and all those things that he said about tremble and do not sin. And according to one commentator, this is David's point. If ye be angry, and if ye think ye have cause to be angry, I feel like I have to read it like a pirate. But this is good stuff. Do not let your disaffection carry you to acts of rebellion against both God and your king. Consider the subject deeply before you attempt to act. Do nothing rashly. Do not justify one evil act by another. Sleep on the business. Converse with your oughten heart upon your bed. Oughten is not even a word we use. This is like old English. I'm not even sure exactly what that means. Oughten heart. The next part, though, is my favorite part of this quote. He says, consult your pillow. I love that. Translation, that there are some things that cause you to get angry, and you need to process these things to make sure that it is worth the emotion that you're about to express. In other words, some of you should not tweet while angry. Some of you should not get on Facebook while angry. You should never write an email while you're angry. You shouldn't send a text out to someone while you're angry. What should you do when you get angry? You should search your own heart and consult your pillow. That is, you should spend some time thinking about, is the emotions that I want to reflect and the emotions that I want to have that are about to come out on another human being, is that a reflection of God? Is this a worthy cause to get angry over? Or is there something else going on? And if you spend some time searching and reflecting and thinking about why you get angry, what you'll find out is oftentimes what you're expressing in anger is actually a different emotion. According to some leading psychologists, anger is a secondary emotion. I was reading an article and it contained this insightful idea about anger. It says, anger can also be a substitute emotion. By this we mean that sometimes people make themselves angry so they don't have to feel pain. People change their feelings of pain into anger because it feels better to be angry than it does to be in pain. This changing of pain into anger may be done consciously or unconsciously. So what does that mean? That means that oftentimes when you're feeling the emotion of anger, there's something else going on inside of your heart. And maybe consciously or even unconsciously, you're angry about something, but the real emotion that you're feeling is pain. And for a lot of us, the reason why we don't understand, why am I just angry all the time? Why does that make me so mad? Why do I lose my cool? Why am I constantly just angry? It is because there's some deep pain inside that you've never dealt with. And the pain, because it's so hard and you want to avoid it and you don't want to think about that situation and you don't want to deal with those problems and you don't want to talk about it, you've stuffed that pain deep down inside, and that pain keeps coming out in the form of anger because it's easier to be angry than it is to deal with your pain. And sometimes for us, when you get angry, you need to start reflecting and saying, am I really angry over something that's worthy of getting angry about? Or is there something else going on? Is it pain, or is it something like lack of sleep? Am I so angry right now at my kids or my spouse or at my boss? Am I angry because they're really doing something wrong? Or am I angry just because I haven't been sleeping very well and I'm on edge? Or for some of you, it might just be that you're hungry. Hangry is a real thing. And if you're finding yourself that you're angry over things that don't really matter, you need to grab a Snickers because it satisfies. You've got to learn how to manage and reflect. You've got to consult your pillow. You've got to ask yourself, you know what, my emotions, I just went level 10. I just feel like I need to scream, I need to yell, I need to express this. Why am I so mad? Am I mad because this is an injustice? Am I mad because this is wrong? Or am I mad just because I didn't get my way? And my reflecting on my being angry, am I really angry ultimately because there's some pain inside that I haven't dealt with? That I haven't dealt with that past relationship. I haven't dealt with my problems from childhood. I haven't dealt with former things, and now it just comes out against other people in angry ways. If you show me someone who is offended all the time, I'll show you someone who hasn't dealt with their feelings of pain. And I am convinced that if there are people, if you maybe you are one or you know one, that they're just looking for things to be offended, that they're mad all the time, that it doesn't take much for them to go level 10, for them just to get upset, I am convinced that that person, and it might even be you in here today, I am convinced that there's some pain inside that you just haven't dealt with. And the pain is coming out, and you think you're angry, but in reality, you're hurting inside. And Paul doesn't tell us what to do. Paul doesn't give us like a list of like, okay, in your anger do not sin. So here's six steps for you to do. And if you follow these six steps, you'll never sin in your anger. And in the Western mindset, in the American mindset, that's how we like. We like for someone to tell us, here's the problem and here's the six steps to fix it. That's how we don't like to think for ourselves. We want people to tell us exactly what to do. But Paul's writing is, and he's entrusting that we're smart enough and we're bright enough that we can do some research and figure things out. What does this mean to not sin in our anger? And you've got to do some research on this. And the reason I think this is so important is because I could stand up here and give you six reasons, six things that you could apply that will help you not get angry, but it's going to be based off what makes me angry. But what makes me angry is different than what makes you angry. So I love that Paul doesn't say, do these six things and voila, you'll never get angry again. He simply gives us the idea that in your anger, do not sin. And so the part you have to figure out is what makes you angry enough to sin? What makes you angry enough to sin? What is it? The emotion of anger is not sin. So if you're feeling angry about something, you don't have to repent of that. You don't have to say sorry to God because you got angry. It's what you do with that anger. And you need to ask yourself, what is it in this world that makes me so angry that I lose my cool in a way that does not represent Jesus? What is it that makes me talk to my spouse in a way that I would be embarrassed if the neighbors heard me? What is it that makes me discipline my kids, not out of a state of love to try to correct them, but that I'm so angry at them, like I'm crossing lines myself because they just won't obey and they won't listen, and now I'm just screaming. What is it inside? What are the things in you? Is it a feeling of you're not being respected? Is it a feeling that people aren't obeying? Is it a feeling that people aren't giving you what you deserve? What is it that would cause you to cross over from, I feel a little anger, I feel this emotion, into sinning? And you've got to do the hard work of figuring out exactly what that is. I don't know what it is for you. But for some of you, it means that you have to just look deep down inside and say, what are the triggers? What are the things inside of me that cause me to go off? And for some of you, it might mean a hard decision because some of you love politics, but you can't handle big doses of watching politics on TV. Because you walk around ticked off at everyone who doesn't agree with the way that you view our world. And for some of you, as hard as it might be, you might need to turn off the TV. Or maybe it's not TV, maybe it's a blog post and you're a reader and you're reading these things and it just stirs you up. And instead of saying, oh, this is going to stir me up to take action and change the world, you're just mad. And then you see other people who don't agree with you and you get mad and you get angry at them. You've got to figure out what are your triggers. What are the things that would cause you to cross the line in your anger? Is it hunger? Is it lack of sleep? Is it something else going on in you? You've got to figure that out, and then you've got to avoid the things that cause you to cross anger lines. I am convinced that sin is easier to avoid than resist. And Paul says, in your anger, do not sin. Well, I am convinced that sin is so much easier to avoid than resist. Let me put this into practical terms for you. If you've ever been on a diet, you can relate to what I'm about to say. If you want to have success in your diet, you've got to clear the house of all junk food. And if you have a spouse who is not dieting because they have a super mutant metabolism and they don't need to diet like you do, and they are eating junk food, if they have junk food in the house, you will resist that for a little while. But the first sign of stress, the first sign of boredom, the first sign of I'm frustrated with a diet, you find yourself in the kitchen with two liters of Coke and just chugging it all, and you're washing it down with Oreos, and then you have all this guilt, and you're like, why did I do that? Why? Because it's easier to avoid than it is to resist. And if you allow your temptation into your house, eventually you'll fall to it. So when it comes to anger, Paul says, in your anger, do not sin. So what are the things that cause you to cross lines and hurt other people and impact your relationships? What are those things? You've got to figure out ways to avoid them and not just resist them. Because anger is an emotion that God has given you, and you cannot just control your anger. You can't just snap your fingers and say, I will not get angry anymore. You've got to figure out ways to, in a healthy way, avoid the things that are going to set you off. So Paul then goes on to say, he gives us this big, broad idea of in your anger, do not sin. That's big things. When you're stuck in traffic, when someone's saying something crazy on Facebook, and these big kind of things that make you angry, don't sin. He then gets it very practical. And he says in your relationships, look at what he says in Ephesians 4, 26b. He says, do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. So the big idea is in your anger, don't sin. But now let's get really practical. And in your relationships, do not allow the sun to go down while you're still angry with someone else. This is one of the rules that my wife and I have in our relationship. We have a few rules that guide us. And one of them is we don't go to bed angry. And the reason that we don't go to bed angry is because if we don't deal with the frustrations that we have right now, you start to form this list in your mind. And the list just carries on. And it starts like this. Okay, she kind of annoyed me, but I don't want to deal with the confrontation, so I'll just file that away. It's not that big of a deal right now. But if I don't deal with it in the moment, after weeks and years go by, eventually I have this long list of things that my spouse has done that has offended me. And eventually it comes out. And maybe it's because I'm hungry, maybe because I'm tired, maybe it's because she's done something that just really frustrated me. And instead of dealing with that issue, I unload the list. Well, you've done this and this and this. And at that point, the person is like, what in the world? And I don't know if you've ever been on the receiving end of the list, but it is impossible to come back from. Like when someone unloads a list on you, you can say you're sorry, but at that point they've been chewing on it and holding on it for so long, you can't go back. It doesn't matter if you say you're sorry. Last January, there was a relationship in my life that I felt like things were just off. And this person was avoiding me and not hanging out with us as much as they used to. And so I confronted it, which I thought was a healthy way. I just said, hey, I really like your friendship, and I really I miss seeing you around. And so if I've done something to offend you, can we just talk about it? Could you let me know? Because I didn't do it on purpose, and I just want to work on our relationship. And this person said they needed some time to think about it, and so they came back the next week. And the next week when we met, this person unloaded the list on me. And the list was multiple things that I had done over the last year and a half. And it was very specific things of like, last year you did this, and it was just this long list. And at first I just said, I am sorry, but it didn't change this person's demeanor. Why? Because they'd been holding on to the list for a really, really long time. And Paul says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. In your relationships with one another, in your relationships with your church and other Christians and your pastor, in your relationship with your boss and other employees, in your relationship with your family, in your anger, don't sin. But now let's get really specific. In your relationship with each other, don't let the sun go down on your anger. I want to make this really practical because I think there's a way that we mismanage our anger. And I want to teach you a healthy way to manage what's really going on with you. Oftentimes in our life, the reason that we get angry at the people closest to us is because we have expectations. And unmet expectations cause anger. And we have unmet expectations for various reasons. But if you've been married, you have felt this. At one point, you may have even said to yourself, how come I get so angry at the person I love the most in this life? It's because you have some expectations that you've thrown out. And any time in this world where someone doesn't meet your expectations, the emotion of anger comes out inside of you. It's why if you're driving down the interstate and someone cuts you off, anger comes up. Why? Because you have an expectation that people aren't going to drive like idiots on 64. And so anytime someone doesn't meet your expectation, you get angry. So what are some practical things that we can do? Mismanaging expectations leads to anger. And I think there's two things we can do. Number one, we mismanage when we do not communicate our expectations. We mismanage when we do not communicate our expectations. Oftentimes, we get angry at people and we've never told them the rules to the game. We've never expressed to our spouse that we are a type A personality, and when we set up a meeting, they need to come 30 minutes early or they're late. We just unload on them, and talk about why they're so lazy and why are they late all the time, and we just unload the list, but we've never expressed to them the rules in which we're playing the game. And oftentimes, we mismanage our anger simply because we haven't expressed the expectations that we have. Maybe you can relate to this. If you've ever unloaded on your spouse because they leave dishes in the sink, did you ever think to have a conversation with them about your expectations? Have you talked to them about how you're very anal about your sink and you think it's rude that there are dishes piling up? Have you ever had that conversation? Or are you just expecting them to play by the rules that you play by in this world? It is unfair to get mad at someone else when you've never told them how to play your game. It's unfair. And if you're mad at other human beings because maybe they interrupt or maybe they cut you off or they don't act or they don't say the way you would do it, well, you've got to learn how to express those feelings in a healthy way. We mismanage our anger when we do not communicate our expectations. And number two, we mismanage our anger when we have unrealistic expectations. Sometimes the reason you're angry is because you're expecting another human being to do something that God didn't create them to do. I want to make this very practical for you. My wife, her dad, growing up, he fixed everything in our house. He never called anyone. He didn't call a plumber. He didn't call a mechanic. He didn't call contractors. He fixed everything. Well, Monica falls in love and marries me, and I don't even know how to fix Kool-Aid. Like, I can't... Like, my kids got Legos for Christmas, and it stressed me out trying to put together their Legos. Like, I'm not, whatever that gene is in fixing things, I don't have it. And so it would be unfair for Monica to hold me to the standard that her dad did. That's unfair. God didn't wire me that way. God gave me a very different set of skills. And oftentimes the reason you get the most angry at other people in your life is because you're expecting them to do something that God didn't create them to do. And you've got to learn to manage your expectations. Is what you're expecting of them, is it realistic? Is it realistic? And maybe it means you have to be honest with yourself. And if you're like a type A personality and you're married to someone who's like way more laid back, you may have to have the conversation before you get stressed out when it comes to things like going on vacation. You might have to say, hey, listen, can I just take all the details with this? Because you wait till the last minute to pack and it just stresses me out and I want to kick you out of my house because you just don't think through all the details like I think through the details. And you've got to have those conversations. It is up to you to manage your expectations. If you're carrying a list of wrongs caused by someone close to you, you are in the wrong. Well, let me say that again. If you're carrying a list of wrongs caused by someone close to you, you are in the wrong. If you've never expressed your expectations, if you have unrealistic expectations, and someone close to you is just constantly not hitting your expectations, I'm not talking about major sinful things. I'm not talking about that they're abusing you or they're hurting you on purpose. I'm talking about the little things in life that cause divisions in our relationship. It is because we hold on to this list of unmet expectations, unrealistic expectations, and we hold on to it, and it causes this division. And if you're carrying a list of wrongs against another human being, you're in the wrong. And Paul starts off really big and he says, listen, don't sin in your anger. And then he gets really practical and he says, hey, don't even go to bed if you're still angry. Deal with the stuff that makes you angry. But he closes by giving what I think is a very important part of this verse. And I want to close by reading what he says in Ephesians 4:27. He says, do not give the devil a foothold. So he's gone from very broad to very specific to now he gives this idea and he says, listen, if you're not careful, if you don't handle, if you don't manage your anger in a healthy way, you will give the devil a foothold. Well, here's a question. Let me just throw it out there for you. How do we give the devil a foothold? We do it one offense at a time. And I'm convinced that every single one of you who's an adult, maybe if you're a teenager, you haven't experienced this yet, but if you're an adult, I'm convinced every single one of you has at one point had a relationship where you were like, we were best friends, we were so close. Or maybe it was a spouse that we were so in love, and then something happened and the relationship broke, and now you can't stand being around them. What happened? What caused that big divide? How did you go from loving someone to now you can't even be in their presence? That is allowing Satan to have a foothold. And how does he do it? One offense at a time. And when you don't deal with the little offenses and the little things that cause you anger inside of you, it builds to a mountain, and eventually you unload the list on someone, and once you unload the list, it is too late. There is no going back. So the practical answer for you is when someone offends you, when you are angered by someone, consult your pillow. Think about, is this really an offense? Are they really doing something intentionally? Did they mean to hurt my feelings? Did they mean to cause me harm? Is this anger justified? And if it is, ask yourself, have I ever communicated my expectations? Have I ever said out loud that when this happens, it hurts my feelings? And if I have said it and they're not fulfilling it, is it because I have unrealistic expectations about my spouse or my friends or even about my church? And you've got to do the hard work of figuring out what causes you to sin in your anger. Here's the application for today. This is your part. This is what you do with all this. Manage your anger by communicating your expectations, feelings, and emotions in healthy ways before the sun goes down. This is where, if you're taking notes, you would really take notes, because this is what you're supposed to do this week. If you're not taking notes, I'm not mad at you. Manage your anger by communicating your expectations, feelings, and emotions in healthy ways before the sun goes down. It is no one's job to manage your emotions and feelings and anger but yours. It's not your spouse's job. It's not your boss's job. It's not your kid's job. It's not your counselor's job. It is your job to manage your emotions in a healthy way, that when you do get angry, it doesn't cause division, but it brings life. And we're going to discover how to do this even more in the next couple weeks. Would you guys pray with me now? God, we just thank you for your love for us, and we thank you that you're so patient with us. And that, God, you give us so much grace, God, for so many of us. We've allowed anger to cause divisions in our relationship. And for some of us right now, God, there's anger because of a list of against someone who has done multiple things against us. And God, would you just soften our heart right now? God, would you soften our heart towards the anger that we have towards other people? God, would you help us to forgive as you've forgiven us? Would you help us to show some grace? And God, would you give us supernatural power to communicate our feelings with the people that we love so that we don't give Satan a foothold and don't allow division to occur? Would you help us to take the next few weeks seriously and to make a commitment to be here, to learn how to manage our anger and manage our emotions? And would you help us to be a people who have a righteous anger that turns the world to you? We thank you for what you're going to do. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.